Hello, and welcome back to the flakiest podcast, Legends of Philadelphia. These are your hosts, Tony Tapioca Balls Strove.
That's not my
name. And show. Johnny Sticky Rice Zeta. Yeah. I'm Brian Mung Bean Beerman, helping out on engineering duties. You might be wondering, what do these guys know about fusion cuisine? Well, in addition to being born and raised in Philadelphia, Strove and Zito have a lifestyle brand, Seth Fellini, that focuses on Philly culture and in-jokes and comfort and podcasts and carbs.
Yeah, that is accurate.
Lots of times, customers will ask, can I get a cheesesteak on French bread? Someday. Or they want to know why it is so hard to pronounce the word baguette. So we decided to start this podcast as an easy explainer for new Philadelphians and a refresher for the old heads. The city fascinates and excites us, so we're hoping to share that with you.
That's, three white guys talking about Vietnamese food.
That's what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like because that's what it is.
That's what I said. If that is what you're interested in, you are in the right place.
Boy, have we got a podcast for you.
We have a podcast for you. Do you remember your first banh mi, Zito?
I do. It was it wasn't that long ago. It was there about 2013 from the Artisan Bakery down in South Philly, which is part of the reason we're talking about this topic today.
Beerman, what was your first banh mi?
I don't really like banh mi. I don't like the carrots on it. I have a weird thing with carrots. Like, I can't swallow it, and I keep chewing it.
Oh.
And I like carrots.
Did I make you eat one from the place on Washington Avenue?
And I like everything about it except for the carrots. Like, the bread was delectable.
You made him eat it.
The meat was, like, delicious. It was barbecue pork. It was delicious. But yeah. The carrots.
You were just spitting the carrots like they were just hanging out of your mouth.
I can't swallow them.
Caught between your teeth.
I guess.
I don't know what it is. Does anyone else have that problem? Can anyone else not swallow? It's only carrots.
If you ever had Vietnamese food, it definitely seems like it definitely can be not the flavors you're expecting on a sandwich. And I could see why, like, at first you might not like it, but I think they're great. My first banh mi was Foo Wah Mini Market in West Philly. I had it working out in West Philly, and everybody was talking about getting this. So I just went along with everyone who's really excited about eating something.
I just followed the crowd.
Like, everybody was, like, so excited about getting these sandwiches. I was like, yeah, I'm in. And then they were like, you want tofu or pork? I was like, pork, absolutely. And everybody was like, tofu is the best. And I don't know. I disregarded that opinion too. You know, I was like, all right, whatever. I thought everybody was a vegetarian or whatever. And then I realized they weren't. They just genuinely liked the tofu one better.
Yeah, I agree. I'm all about the tofu one myself.
Well, I guess we can get into it. But yeah, I guess that was my first one. And I thought that Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Eagles, married the woman who worked there. That's the legend, right?
That's what you say.
So according to you, you're the only person I've ever heard this from.
It was in Philly Magazine. I didn't make it up. Where would I get that?
I don't know. It comes up every time we're eating banh mi too, which is a lot. So we talk about it. We talk about it a lot. For anyone who doesn't know, in Vietnamese cuisine, a banh mi is a short baguette with thin, crisp crust and a soft, airy texture. It is often split lengthwise and filled with savory ingredients like a hoagie and served as a meal. Patchogue Avenue lost one of the greatest banh mi makers this week, Andre Chin at Artisan Bakery. So today felt like an opportunity to remember a great chef and one of the dishes he loved so much. I love banh mi.
Wow.
I love Andre's banh mi. I love his croissants. I'm going to miss him a lot.
It was probably the best banh mi.
It was my favorite banh mi. And they turned me on to it. I would go there for the croissants. And there about 2013, They were like, hey, try this. And he was like, I was hooked.
You're like, you've been here for hours. You want lunch?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Sounds like something Amanda would say.
So I got addicted to it. It feels like I know this probably isn't true, but it feels like a healthier version of a hoagie. You know, you're like the hoagie has so much different.
It's got carrots on it.
It's got carrots on it. Healthier. So, you know, it's got to be good for you.
It's pretty much good for you.
It's light. It's refreshing. The vegetarian alternatives are excellent, but the pork is also great. The bread makes it, and I don't know. Philadelphia has the best bread.
The bread is incredible.
Across the board on everything. So of course this sandwich is great. You know.
Bread is like delicate. Like if you touch it, it like cracks.
It's great. It's perfect.
It's like a Fabergé perfect. Egg. It's so delicate.
Delicate and beautiful.
You almost don't want to bite into it, but you totally do.
I just bite the microphone. Arr. I'm just gonna overdo it on Bombies this week.
You've got some on your desk. You're ready to go.
Yes, and if it still sounds like I'm in my mom's basement, it's because we are still displaced. So, ha ha ha.
So again, if you see Trove out there, be nice to him. He needs it.
It'd be a perfect. It'd be nice to be. That'd be a perfect outlet for me. Just like overdoing it on.
They're like, sir, you have to leave.
I was like, give me another round.
They call it the great bombie shortage of 2022.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, everyone.
So what is a bombie? Well, a bombie means bread. That's its literal translation. Inside the bread, you can have different proteins, but the vegetables are always the same. It's pickled daikon and carrots and cilantro, cucumber, raw jalapeno peppers. And that is consistent throughout traditionally, and so are the spreads, mayonnaise and pork liver pate.
I never had a liver version of it.
You never had it with the liver pate?
No. Have you?
No, I've only had it with the mayo.
I'll try it. Yeah, I think last year Trove sent me to Ballet, is that the name of it, on Washington Avenue?
Washington Avenue, yeah.
To get the barbecue pork one, and it was like really good, but I was like, does it have mayonnaise on it? And you were like, no, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't have mayonnaise on it. And on the thing, it's like literally the first on the
ingredient.
Board, it's like the first ingredient, mayo.
It's not the first ingredient I think of. It's like mayo is like the last thing that I ever consider.
That's what completes it, though.
Stop it. There's an order to importance of the sandwich. It's the bread.
And mayo is number one.
No, mayo is not number one.
Even they had it.
The bread is number one. That's the point of this podcast.
Yeah, but after the bread, you can't argue. It's mayo next. The mayo is the next thing on the list.
Look, I would typically say that it's the meat is next, but the tofu is so good that maybe it is the mayo.
How do they cook the tofu or prepare it?
I'm telling you, I don't normally like tofu, but it's definitely the exception is like the sandwich.
Mm-hmm. I like tofu, and I've had it two ways. I've had it like cubed, and I've had it like diced up, like scrambled style. And I think I like it cubed because it has a better texture for the sandwich.
I got my dad to eat the tofu version of it, and he's like all about tofu. Like does not eat tofu, but this is what he does. Tofu, yeah, so good. It's great.
Yeah, this got me into tofu. I was similar to Trove's story. I was told I was getting the
killer,
pork
killer tofu.
Somebody was like, "Hey, you got to get the killer tofu. It's the best." And I was like, "Fine, I'll see what all the fuss is about." And then I was like, all about tofu. And now, I don't know. If you had gone back to the '90s and told me that I would grow up to be a middle-aged man who eats tofu and couscous, I'd be like. I'd be like, what kind of silly horse shit is that? But it's like my favorite meal. So
okay. Here we are.
Here we are.
People can change.
People can change.
You become everything you hate, huh?
Yeah. You live long enough to see yourself become the villain. That's me. Me and my tofu
you know
sandwiches.
What? I don't really like the X-Men. I don't really like X-Men. I'm not really into that anymore.
I don't really.
Star Trek's too fantastic. I don't want to spend any more time on this.
I can't take this Cyclops anymore. I can't take this Wolverine anymore.
The tangle of their dramas.
It's always something with those two.
So where does the bomb E come from? In the 1950s, a young man by the name of Li Vo left his family's home in the Vietnamese countryside and set up a lunch cart in Saigon. He began training with a French chef who taught him how to bake baguettes as light and flaky as any in Paris. He stuffed them with meat, fresh herbs, and pickled vegetables. He experimented with different flavor profiles by adjusting the timing, portions, and chemistry of his ingredients. But the focal point of the meal is the bread, distinguishing this sandwich from other sandwiches. In fact, banh mi literally translates to the word bread in English, and since that was the focus, Li Vo started selling the sandwiches as banh mi.
Makes sense.
Easy so it's to such, say. It's so the focus yeah. that the name is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Give me one of them breads.
This is making a lot of sense.
The short baguette in a banh mi sandwich, characterized by its crispy crust and fluffy inside, is a remnant of the mid-19th century Vietnam, which was a period marked by French colonial occupation. About a century later, in the 1950s, Saigon, the banh mi sandwich had crossover appeal for a diverse palate. So lots of people wanted this sandwich. This sandwich was appealing to both the French occupiers and the Vietnamese people who were living there originally. And so everyone liked it.
This is a way heavier topic than I was expecting. I'm sorry. I blame my stomach to talk about French colonialism in Vietnam. I'm sorry.
People love sandwiches.
People love sandwiches.
Like the on Hog Island when they had the hoagie, people were just like, it was like front page news. People love sandwiches. That's a universal.
Anybody who has a new spin on a sandwich is going
to
get...
Much like music, a sandwich is always...
sandwiches and,
always...
and bass lines.
And bass lines.
To universal...
Yeah, it's in every culture.
Yeah, if you have a new twist on an old sandwich, that is something people want to know about. And these sandwiches were a hit. And by 1965, Vo was running dozens of carts around the region. However, as war in Vietnam encroached, maintaining a business became untenable. And in 1972, Vo and his wife... Lan Nguyen gathered their children and departed for the United States.
Wow. So this guy was selling these sandwiches during the
Vietnam In the lead
War.
Up to, yeah.
In Vietnam.
Wow.
In Saigon. Wow. He had a bunch of lunch trucks in Saigon. He was, yeah.
And how much harder it would be to come to the United States while that was happening, too, and then, like, to start a business that's that popular and then made this... thing.
He had to abandon his very popular business and flee his country of birth, and the only thing he could bring with him was his idea for a sandwich. I'm not even like that's not even a joke. The only thing he had was his
that
was
is
a
beautiful.
Good idea for a sandwich.
That is beautiful. That's USA, USA. That's that's what
this country is about.
That's people. What it's about.
All about fucking up somebody else's country and driving their people here so we can have their food.
Their sandwiches.
Give us your sandwiches.
Give us your tired, your poor, your new sandwiches.
Your new sandwiches.
Your bread wrapped meats.
This is heavier than I was expecting it to be.
So Vo came to the United States and he opened his first bakery, the Ba Li Bakery, in 1982 in San Jose, California. When deciding on the name for his bakery, Vo chose Ba Li because Ba is the Vietnamese word for the number three, which represents him being the third brother in his family. And Li is his first name. Now, I heard this two ways. I read this on two different sources. One said that he was the third brother, and another said that he was the second brother, but that ranks him as third in the family. So that's where the third comes from. Mm. I just, there were these two different sources that kind of described it slightly differently. Just wanted to mention that.
But that's what they're implying. It's a number.
Three.
Gotcha.
It's a magic number.
Gotcha. I know it's a magic number. It is.
It's a magic number.
After receiving success with his initial San Jose location, Vo decided to expand, and he opened a second Bali in Chicago 6 years later. One of Vo's three daughters opened a Bali location in Philadelphia in 1998. For a location, they chose a former warehouse on Washington Avenue set midway between 6th and 7th Streets. It was the Anchor Building in what was then an empty lot and would soon become the third Asian strip mall on the South Philly thoroughfare. So he is out in San Jose in 82, and then by 90, he is in Chicago as well. And then by 1998, he's also in Philadelphia. So he's got both coasts and the middle of the country. He's got a hub for his Bami sandwiches. He's got all his bases covered.
I mean, that's world. That's what it's about.
Yeah,
that's,
this sandwich is poised to take off.
Franchise like that, it's awesome. Yeah, and the Washington Avenue location, we've talked about before because it is where part of the Union Cemetery was located, which was a Civil War cemetery.
Right.
That was was dug up and replaced by a strip mall.
By Delicious Fusion sandwiches.
And a supermarket.
By Delicious sandwiches, Fusion sandwiches, yeah.
I never knew Bali was a franchise.
Well,
I just thought it was
I mean, it's a family-owned business. It's they own...
Not a franchise, but yeah. I just thought it was
It's
the,
cool. It's one of the first ones,
Yeah, this is the family who brought it to the United States. These are his kids, and they ran the Chicago and the Philadelphia stores. And on October 1998, Tai Nguyen opened the doors to the Bali Bakery. 3 months later, Nguyen met her future husband Harry Tran. Tran was a fellow Saigon native who had made it out of Saigon less than a week before the North Vietnamese army invaded. And he began helping with the shop at night, running the front of the house while Tai oversaw the kitchen. They offered a selection of made-to-order sandwiches on house-baked bread, including house-ground pork sausage rolls that have gone on to become their biggest seller.
Their pork is iconic. There, I said it.
On the Philly pork shirt.
I'll double down on that. I double down on it.
On the Philly pork shirt that you drew, on the Philly pork shirt that you made for South Fellini,
yeah.
Is the Bami section of that pig dedicated to Bali? Is that where you were getting Bami at the time?
At that time, I was artisan. I was hardcore artisan.
Hard artisan. Okay.
Yeah. But honestly, when I started getting into Bami's, like, I went to all the places. Like, a lot of people I worked with were just like crazy about them, and they were suggesting all these different places. And I think I went the wrong spots. I went the right spots, but I like for a while, like every Vietnamese spot on Washington Avenue, I probably walked into. I was like, "What do you got?"
Yeah, when it was introduced to me,
I'm here
as
for
well,
the pork.
Like, yeah, a new way to eat a hoagie. It reinvigorated my love for the sandwich, and I similarly just had it at as many places as I could. If I saw it on the menu, I ordered it.
Yeah, I had all different ways. Yeah, I truly love them.
This is the story with like a bunch of Philadelphia foods where it's like. It's like a different culture spin on something. And it's like,
yeah, even like some places will put, let's say, like Vietnamese hoagies. And it's like, wow, it's where have, how did we get here? Give me that.
Yeah, give me one.
Give me two.
I'm going to want one later.
I'm sorry. Give me two. I'm going to take one home.
I'm going to eat one while I walk and then the other one while I'm watching TV later.
Eat one while I walk. The Philadelphia lifestyle.
So the Bali shop became a must-visit stop for Vietnamese expats traveling the Northeast Corridor, as well as a go-to spot for the growing local community. And by the end of the 2000s, Bami had crept into mainstream American consciousness when local restaurants began using Bali's bread in their own dishes. Desire for the bread led customers to the Vietnamese bakery, and Bali began to attract regular clientele as well as foodies from other cities. So restaurants in town were using their bread, you know, just to have for their meals, for their dishes. And then people are like, this is bread is amazing. Where did you get this bread? And they're like, oh, we get it from this place down in South Philly. And people were going down there to buy it. And while they're going down there to buy bread for themselves, they're like, what's this? What's this sandwich you have here? What's this?
What is this?
What's this?
What's all this?
Pork
what's
pate there. I want to. Is that spicy brown mustard? No, it's pork pate. That's interesting.
I always. These people, the restoration people working on our house because it's all messed up. And I've been chatting with them, and I just started mentioning that they should try these banh mi's. And I even went down to Washington Avenue. I took pictures of it on the menu. And I'm trying to introduce this to even more people. These are definitely guys I'm not sure would ever have tried this, but I am trying to break this into their world, into the.
You're going to have to buy them lunch one day.
The fire restoration guys.
Like, hey guys, lunch is on me. You guys like pork? I know you do.
Yeah, I know you do.
You might want to pick off the carrots. Some people don't like the carrots. That's what I've heard.
Some people don't.
I probably will do this, so I'll stay tuned.
Some people look down upon the carrots. And those people are looked down upon but from society.
You notice I haven't talked to you this entire episode.
I don't pick the carrots off, but I can't do the jalapenos anymore. I'm too old. No, the acid reflux, it's just too much for me. So I'm
ow, my reflux.
Oh, my reflux.
I'm not on Prilosec. I'm not trying to get on Prilosec. So I gave up the jalapenos.
I've been off of it. I've changed my ways, but this episode is going to
put you right back on it.
Ham, I need the bottle. Where'd you put it?
Give me the bottle. Yeah, you'll find me passed out in front of the halal truck in front of CVS.
You need to go to rehab because you can't stop eating from food trucks. You're just all over the city. I'll tell you when I've had enough.
I'm really anxious, so I eat a lot right now.
It's like a scene from like a 1950s movie. You're like getting increasingly more bloated, and there's like neon signs passing by. It's like noodles, halal.
Yeah. I'm sweating. Yeah. My tie's coming off. My hat's like askew. My hat on my head.
One side of your shirt's untucked.
Yep.
Your wife finds you the next day passed out on the front step.
I call my wife. We lost it all, baby. I don't know what happened.
I rolled the dice. It didn't work out.
I'm in the doghouse tonight.
6 weeks of Betty Ford. Got to dry out.
6 weeks of Betty Ford. Look, and also the gateway drug for me was the soup, was pho.
Was pho.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was, you get into that, and then before you know it, you're eating banh mi's.
Slippery slope.
It's a slippery slope. You don't even know where, how'd I get here?
It's gateway food.
Mm-hmm. I love to eat. I'm sorry, Bierman.
Don't apologize to me.
That's definitely gonna be your problem. It's gonna, Bierman.
I need Prilosec. I need Prilosec. I know you got some, man. Come on.
Quit holding out on me.
It's for Ham.
So in 2007, banh mi is getting popular all over the place, and that gives birth to the fusion banh mi.
So what's the fusion banh mi?
That's like mixing.
That's like other people
up.
Messing with the format of banh mi.
Yeah, that's like.
It's like when a white guy does it.
When a white person does it. Or like jazz fusion.
That's like jazz fusion.
I get it now.
Oh, jazz jokes.
Yeah, it's like when Kenny G does it. It's not the same thing with it's not like when Louis Armstrong does it. It's different. It's just way different.
It's way different.
It's way different.
Yeah, I guess it was people who were so into the idea of making sandwiches on baguettes that they took the formula and they were like, I don't have pork, or I don't like pork. I'm making it with chicken. I'm making it with tofu.
I don't like pork.
Yeah. I'm putting it my bacon on mine, you know. So I think there was just a lot of people getting creative with it. 2007.
A breakfast bun, man.
Yeah.
A breakfast bun.
get some scrambies on there, yeah.
Scrambies.
Eggy wags.
We were doing crazy things in 2007.
Excuse me. Could I have more scrambies, please? Could I get... Please? Thank you.
But Bali stayed the course, and they continued to make the most authentic version of their father's creation. They did not get involved in the fusion stuff. They were like, you want the real thing, you come here.
They just kept doing it.
Yeah, for the longest time, they just kept doing what they were doing. And
yeah.
But bakeries like Artisan on 12th and Mars at the time began selling tofu bami as a vegetarian alternative. And this really opens the doors for people.
Yo, it is the best.
I highly recommend the tofu version over the meat version. It's just a better sandwich. It's just a lighter sandwich. You can just house it. I guess the way I define something being good now is not just by tasting good, but how logy do I get afterwards. And the less bogged down I feel after eating.
Sometimes that feels good, though.
No.
Yeah. You have to admit. Sometimes you have to admit sometimes I feel
no.
good.
No. I don't want to feel tranquilized. I don't want to feel tryptophan. I want to be able to eat a sandwich and then sprint if I have to.
Sometimes I want to ruin my day. But that's but that's not what this is.
Like Bira. You can't like eat a Bira and like dip in the sauce and then drink the sauce at the end and feel like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go to work now. Now I'm gonna go to work.
Yeah, that's it. You gotta call it a day at that point.
Going to a day's work.
It's time to sleep.
The bami's have so much flavor. That's the other thing. You're tasting so many things at once.
Yeah.
Not to be all like.
It's a party in your mouth.
Oh, it is. It's
but
so
it
good.
Is.
It's so good.
It is.
It is. Everyone's invited.
Amanda Eep and Andre Chin's understated artisan boulanger pâtissier has been turning out impressive French breads and pastries since 2006.
Boulanger.
Man, we have been practicing saying it for 20, 25 minutes, and I still botched it.
Should have recorded that.
We should have recorded.
That should have been the show.
I got to do each word individually. Artisan.
We.
Boulanger. Nope.
Yeah, nope. It's like a little recording of each that you just drop in each word at one at a time.
The artisan bakery.
That's too much work.
Boulanger. It's hard to say it without affecting an accent. And like I just, my hoagie mouth fights it. No matter how much I love the banh mi, my hoagie mouth can't wrap its lips around it.
Bon me mouth. You need a bon me mouth.
I need a bon me mouth.
I mean, like, when you like do like the fake French accent, you kind of sound like an asshole.
Yeah, it sounds like. Yeah, I'm not trying to make fun of them. You know what I mean? I don't want to. Oh, it sounds like I'm doing a bad French impression, a bad Pepe Le Pew or something. It's not what we're about.
This is not an episode for saying things correctly.
No.
We're trying.
We're doing our best. If tweet at us. Let us know what we mispronounced.
Yeah.
Feel free to do that anytime. Amanda and Andre introduced tofu and classic versions of the Vietnamese hoagies, despite the couple not being Vietnamese or French, for that matter, themselves.
French.
Both were born in Cambodia. Amanda's family settled in Philadelphia, where her father owned a donut shop in West Philadelphia. Andre, meanwhile, was in Paris studying baking. Their paths crossed during one of Andre's visits to the United States when he stopped into her dad's store, where Amanda was then working. They married and set up the Artisan not long after that.
Damn.
That is romantic.
Yeah, it is.
That's beautiful.
That is beautiful.
In 2013, Artisan shut down for 4 months to move locations and reopen at 13th and Mifflin. I want to talk for a minute.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
They used to be at 12th and Mars, and they were at this little corner spot at 12th and Mars, and they were there since like 2002. I remember when they opened. That's the street that's where I grew up. That's like where I lived with my parents. So, yeah. And there was a bar there before they moved in, and it was called the Coyote Cantina. And it was a 90s vaporwave oasis at the end of 12th and Mars, and it had a weird sign.
It was true hoagie wave.
It was the checkerboard. Beautiful. It was the neon lights. It was a neon coyote. And I wish I was looking for pictures of it because I wanted to like tweet about it when looking up things for this episode. I even called my mom. I was like, did we ever take a picture by the Coyote Cantina? And she was like, no, what are you even like, talking
why
about?
Why would you do that?
It was a bar. You were a child. Why would we ever do that? But I...
So you're saying they opened up near there or next to
No, they
to
took
it,
over that spot. So the Coyote Cantina closed and then they took over the spot. It like the Coyote Cantina opened up in like the early 90s and it was only open for like a year or two. I looked it up on newspaper.com. They were just like... They were not getting great reviews. But then the exterior of this place stayed the Coyote Cantina for years and nothing was there. And it was like turquoise and pink.
Got you.
And it had a neon coyote out front of it. And it was just there and weird.
something with like that 90s aesthetic in the 2000s, man, is like nothing worse than that.
Nothing cornier than that. Now it's awesome. Now I love it.
Yeah. Well, right.
But in 2002, it was just a weird eyesore. And they moved in there. Amanda and Andre moved in there. And they took down the turquoise awning, but they didn't take down the pink exterior. So it was like still this like weird pink spot at the end of the block. And I know it took them a little while to catch on because they came just before this influx of like new Philadelphians to South Philly who would like experiment and try new places. Before that, everybody who was buying bread in South Philly had been buying bread from the same place for 25 years, for 50 years. You know, those bakers.
Right. All the Italians aren't going to go to an Asian family.
And they're not switching. They've been going to the same bread maker for years. They're not going to switch. You know, you're just not going to, you know, this guy, you know, his kids, you know? And so it was really hard for them to start off there. And it was a while before.
What a tough place.
Yeah, it was a while before I went in there. And when I first went in there, it was for croissants. I was definitely checking them out for their sweets.
I guess my friend Noah, who was in the film industry, got me to go there for breakfast sandwiches. And I think we had them. I was like, holy shit. And I only went back like the next day, and I think I had two. And I made myself like sick because I just kept like, you're
too
F2.
Much butter. Yeah.
That's too much.
You ever just like an artisan, just be like, give me another one. And just, oh.
I'm not done.
Give me another one. And I can stomach a bacon, egg, and cheese and like a sweet one. But two bacon, egg, and cheeses, that'll ruin your day. And honestly, sometimes that's awesome.
I'm not about ruining the day. I think one is just fine, and then I spring into action. I think it's just the right amount of bacon, egg, and cheese.
No. That's
not enough.
You're like, not no, enough. You're missing the point. If you don't eat it until you're sick, did you really eat it?
I mean, I've eaten. There's so much. I've done that so many times there. I don't know. I don't ever learn my lesson.
I wonder if do chefs find that to be a compliment when you're like, I eat so much of your food, I make myself sick.
This guy ate so much he threw it up, and we had to clean it up, and then he ran out.
Yeah, I come in like a toga, and I bring a feather, and I throw up in a... You know, like, give it again!
Yeah, like the vomitorium.
Yep.
In the
him
Coliseum.
Die. More wine. More...
More
bacon, egg, and cheese on a croissant, please.
Send another Christian to the Lions and give me another baguette.
I guess if I could, I would.
In order to maintain their signature flavor, Andre and Amanda had their oven moved with them. That oven is very special for French bread because it has a steamer. Amanda says it was expensive to move, but not as expensive as buying a new one. Yeah, it keeps the bread all fresh and flaky. That's what these ovens cost more than $50,000, and you could make the bread without it, but the crust won't be the same. That's how they get that baguette crust.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's the difference.
How big is it? Is it huge?
I mean, I worked in a bakery years ago, and it is like built into the building pretty much. Mm. It's constantly, it never turns. If they're the same, I would imagine they are. Like, they never really turn them off. They're constantly burning, and they're constantly hot.
Yeah,
right.
They're just like, I don't know. They cook at a heat that's like unbelievable. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to work at Cosme's Bakery on 13th and Oregon, and the place is like a convenience store now, and I wonder if that oven is still in there actually.
When you go to the artisan, you can kind of see the oven from the front, from the seating area. You can see about half of it, and it is a big oven. It's a big hulking oven. It's very impressive, and I always find these giant bakeries, these pizzeria ovens, these pretzel ovens to be interesting because of how attuned they have to be, how fine-tuned they have to be to make these very specific items that we've talked about on the show.
Yeah, and if you change it, it's not going to be the same.
It's not the same anymore. It's a completely different dish. It's a completely different kind of bread.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't make a banh mi with a Sarcone's roll. You just wouldn't do that.
No, you wouldn't do that. I'll tell you though, the artisan bread definitely rivals Sarcone's. There, I said it.
Wow, fighting words. But
we are lucky to live in Philadelphia to have so many great bakers. You know.
So much bread.
This is a podcast about bread.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what's so great about the banh mi is that texture we're talking about. Artisan reveals that because they use slow rise dough, they don't force the loaves of bread to grow fast. And so they don't use a lot of yeast in their dough, which a lot of bakeries do to make that dough ready to bake in a couple of hours. But Artisan takes 8 hours for their dough to rise at least.
Damn.
And they're almost always sold out by noon. So a lot of time to make it, and it flies out the door real fast.
You got to get there.
Yeah. It is honestly one of my favorite places to eat ever. It is a very – I used to love going for – I mean, I still do, but I used to love going all the time for those bacon, egg, and cheese breakfasts. We lived close by, so it was a quick walk in the mornings. And we were there very often. We're going to miss Andre, and we want to thank him from the bottom of our hearts for sharing his great talent with us. He brought this delicious Sammy into our little neighborhood and made our worlds a bit bigger as a result. And we really appreciate that.
I'm truly going to miss him. He loved food as much as he was great at preparing food. He also loved food. And I enjoy talking about food with him, me and Joanna went on a vacation to Toronto once, and he gave us all food recommendations, a place to eat in Toronto. And he told us to stay in Chinatown. We did that. And they sent us to like a mall to eat. That's very specific places. And, right. but like, it wasn't like a, it was, he directed us to a lot of great food, and, truly we'll miss him.
Their, desserts and pastries are also really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely love them. And I would take my dog over there on Sunday mornings real early sometimes and try and beat the rush. And he caught me one time feeding my dog feeding Ziggy a flake of croissant under the table. And he went in the back and he made a croissant for Ziggy specifically. And he brought it out and we fed it to the dog together.
Dog croissant.
He made a little tiny dog croissant. It was like 2-3 inches. It was like a mini croissant. And he like peeled it apart and he fed it to the dog. Yeah, it was really sweet. And I was like, no, no. And he was like, why, do you want it? And I was like, no, no. yeah, great guy. Absolutely great guy. And introduced me to the banh mi. And it's become a quintessential Philly sandwich. And if you haven't tried one, you should. And it's the perfect weather for it right now.
Yeah, 100,000 degrees.
Yeah. Makes you sweat a little. jalapeno makes you sweat. Sweat.
If you're not sweating, you didn't really eat it.
If you don't have a bellyache, you didn't enjoy it.
You know, maybe it's got to hurt a little bit.
Okay, that's pretty much all there is to know about the Bommy. Please check out our website, www.southsalinity.com, for cool Philly-inspired merch. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Follow along and join in the conversation. We want to hear from you. We're at South Salini everywhere. Do you like Bommy? Do you take the carrots off? Do you take the jalapenos off? What do you do to make it special? What is the place you go to do that makes it special? What are you doing? Look out for new episodes of the podcast every Monday. Stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask, and try the tofu.
Bye.